Hello and welcome to the Gegenpress, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. It's Monday the 17th of May. I'm Andrew Hedspeth and I am joined as always by the topist of Legacy Reds is Mr. Alex Purdy. Before we go any further, I need an injury update. How are we looking on the broken foot, Alex?
Right, so 1 week on, it's actually not too bad. I think I might make the Euros, to be honest.
Yes!
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Round of applause.
Will you be back for Burnley, though? I mean, you can be in the squad.
No. I don't want to play that game either.
Yeah. I can see the crutches in the corner of your room there as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
are they still getting a run out?
Nah, they really hurt my hands, so just left them.
Okay, it sounds a little bit like you're faking this injury, to be honest
no,
with you.
No, it's really bad. I'm not going to show you. The swelling's still there. If it's you want to see a pic, DM me.
I've been burned by that offer before.
Yeah, I was going to say, in isolation, that does not sound good.
Sure. Should we move on?
We are also joined by not one, but two real, actual football journalists today. Of course, we have Emma Sanders. How are you, Emma?
I'm good, although now I feel like a really bad human because I completely forgot that Purds broke his foot. So when you were asking for an injury update, I was like... So who? I was like, has somebody else been injured since Jota? But yeah, no. So apart from the, you know, the massive feeling of guilt that I now have, I'm good. Yeah, good.
Do you want to remind the listeners, Purs, of how you broke your foot as well? Because it was spectacularly stupid.
It was stupid. Come on, not spectacularly. I just jumped up for a header. The ball was nowhere near me. And I landed on the side of my foot and rolled it and broke my metatarsal, apparently. There you go. Oof.
That was like, remember when that injury, everyone had that injury. It was like David Beckham had it before one of the World Cups. It became like a real, like, popular thing.
Are you comparing me to David Beckham?
In a way.
Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
I feel like David Beckham set the trend though, didn't he? It was like before him, no one had really heard of it. And then when he did it, everyone was like, you know what? I fancy a bit of that.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, there was Alex Purdy.
Just us two. Yeah.
There you go. And as I mentioned, we do have another guest with us on the pod this week. I am delighted to announce that I just member to the Gegenpress pod squad. It is Lizzie Becerano. How are you doing, Lizzie?
Good. I'm very, very happy to be here. It's quite exciting all the way from the States.
Yeah, so Lizzie works with us at 90 Min, but is based in Miami, but is actually... Well, Mexican American, how did you come to support Liverpool in the first place? What's the story there, Lizzie?
Quite silly, I would say. My family and I just took a trip to Liverpool for the Beatles, actually.
No way.
The tourist thing there, and we had about an hour in between tours. And I mean, we've always been a very football centric family, so we thought, why not go to Anfield? Kill a bit of time. I was about 12 at the time, and I remember it was the old museum where they had a video of You'll Never Walk Alone through the decades, and I just remember planting myself in front of that video for about 45 minutes just staring at it, and I thought, yep, this is me, here I am. And ever since then, suffered through a little bit with Liverpool, and I'm now rejoicing. Now finally rejoicing.
Oh my god, that's so good. That's so much better an origin story than I was expecting. Really, it's better than my Liverpool origin story.
Jeez. I think it's better than all of ours put together. So
yeah,
we should just all go now. To be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Mine's literally the only just, way.
Yeah, I mean, literally, mine was because I'm from a part of the UK that has absolutely no football teams, and my parents are Scottish and Irish, so it was just a friend of my dad's from work who just gave me a Liverpool shirt when I was about five, and then it just stuck from there. So that was it for me, which is nowhere near as exciting, unfortunately, as your story. But I'm going to ask you now, just because we're talking about Purdy's injury, have you ever had any football related injuries?
Unfortunately not. I had a 2-year career, and most of the time I played left bench. And from then I learned to enjoy the game as a spectator rather as a player. So it's been great since then.
Yeah, so just splinters then. That's the only thing you need to worry about, really.
I love how you said unfortunately you've not had a sports injury. No, that's a good thing, Lizzie. That's fortunately that you haven't had a sports injury.
No, but like we love the war scars. You play and then you get to say you injured. Like would have liked to get on the pitch, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I'm over it now.
Yeah, I mean, Perds, the enjoyment for you is just telling people about getting injured playing football, isn't it? I mean, you're loving that right now.
It's embarrassing how much I love the attention, but I do. Yeah. I'd probably do it again. I'd recommend it.
Well, we better get into actually talking about Liverpool. And one man who is, I'm sure, loving the attention right now is Alisson. In my pre-pod notes, it just says, Alisson, oh my God, let's talk about Alisson. So let's do that. I mean, Emma, you're probably the biggest Alisson fan or stan I know in the world. So I'm going to go to you first on this. Just talk to me about Alisson.
I mean, to be honest, I pictured us just screaming for like 2 minutes on this podcast because that's pretty much what I did. So I was doing the live text, obviously. I always seem to do the dramatic ones these days. So I was doing
I can't believe how restrained you were. I saw your live text, and it was so, like, I'm not going to say boring, but I just thought there was room there for more capitalization, you know. And
I am meant to be, you know, unbiased. so I did have to play it cool a little bit. But and it was also kind of the point that I didn't really know what to say. So hence the lack of anything in there, because I was like, I think I just have to, like, explain the goal. So obviously I like flashed it and was like, the goalkeeper has scored, like in like capital letters. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And then, so we have like a group Skype chat, because obviously we're all working from home at the moment. So usually if we were working in the office, like everyone would have been running around screaming. So I just sort of put in the WhatsApp chat, I was just like, oh my God. And then put, oh my God, in capital letters. And then was like, oh my, a word which I can't say on the podcast, God. And then I was like, oh crap, I actually need to like report on this. So yeah, it was just like, it was insane. Like, I genuinely didn't know what to make of it. And then all night I was like, I can't calm down. I had to go for a run at like 11:30 at night because I just couldn't sit still. Honestly, I was so pumped. I was like, I don't understand it. Like, it's just the way that I was texting someone this morning. It's the way that he made it look so simple. So,
yeah, it was a genuinely really good header.
It was incredible. It was like, he just ran up and it was like, oh yeah, I'm just coming up for the corner. And then Trent puts in an absolute worldie. By the way, that's not even Trent's most famous corner. It's like his second most famous corner. So Trent puts in an absolute worldie of a delivery and Alisson's just like, yeah, I'll just nod this in. And then he's like, look at me, I'm a cool guy. And like Bobby Firmino, I was actually concerned about him. I was like, is he having a heart attack? Like, I was like, someone needs to check on him. Is he going to be okay? The scenes were just unreal, but yeah, no, I was obviously delighted for him. And I think his post-match interview was incredible. And I think like I've just got so much respect for how well-spoken he was. And clearly it was an emotional moment for him. So it was just fantastic to see. And it obviously meant a lot to everyone as well.
Yeah, we'll come to that interview. Perds, first keeper to score for Liverpool in the club's history. First goalkeeper in the Premier League to score with a header, which surprised me because it just in my head there's been like three or four different heading from goal. That's how goalkeepers normally score, isn't it? But apparently not. Klopp compared his goal to Giroud after the game as well because it was such a good header. I mean, we're talking goal of the season here, surely.
For us, definitely. You know
for
what?
Everyone.
You nearly spoiled it for me though, didn't you? On the WhatsApp chat.
Yeah, I did.
Because I see him running up for the corner and my phone goes. It says OMG from Andy. I'm like, what's going on? Has someone just gone close? Have we scored? Surely it's not Alisson, even though I can see him running up and then nods it in. I didn't see your message after, which was just a series of characters that made no sense. Very excited as we all were. I sort of adopted this weird sort of high-pitched laugh that I couldn't stop for about 2 minutes where I was just in disbelief, head and hands. Honestly, maybe top five moments or top three moments watching Liverpool for me was against West Brom. Incredible.
Amazing. Lizzie, I mean, paint us the picture. Where were you watching this? Like, with the time difference, was this a morning game for you?
It was. It was rather early, but nothing we wouldn't do for Liverpool. Nearly spilled my coffee, had it in hand, got quite nervous. Never in a million years expected Alisson to make that at all. I think the first thought that went into my head was, what if fans had been there?
Oh my gosh.
What would have happened? I think that would have been unreal. I just couldn't even imagine it. So, and then I would just went into confusion and whether if it was like real or not, doubted reality for a bit, and then just wanted to continue on from there.
Yeah, like I agree with you, because when I saw, like, when it first went in and everything happened so fast, I just assumed that it was Nat Phillips who got it, because I saw them both jumping at the same time. I was like, it must have been Phillips. But then when that replay comes through, it's just, oh my God, amazing. Lizzie, I don't know if you saw on Twitter that Liverpool, like Liverpool's official account, had the Twitter graphic card saying Alisson scores, like already ready.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I didn't understand that, because I also saw a lot of tweets on the other end saying like, oh, Alisson's coming up. Like, what is he going to do? Love those now. But no one in a million years expected anything, or at least I didn't. And I have a lot of faith in Alisson and absolutely didn't expect anything.
No.
Emma Perds is the problem then, like with our goal scoring this season, that we needed to put Alisson up front? I mean, that's where we've been going wrong, right?
I mean, to be honest, I think he should be up there for the running for the Golden Boot next season. That should be on his goals. I think we found a natural goal scoring replacement for Firmino, you know, in terms of rotation. So
swap them around, get Firmino in goal for a couple of games, see how it goes.
I was going to say Mane, because he's still off the boil. So maybe he gets Golden Glove. Maybe they swap the awards.
Hey, did you see? Well, Alisson now has as many Premier League goals for Liverpool as Mario Balotelli as well, which is nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great stat.
What a great era.
Yeah.
Great throwback.
I absolutely agree with Lizzie, by the way, in the doubting reality. So I didn't really go through that phase last night, but I went through it this morning, where I was sort of like, reread the match report and then like reread the stats and was like, did that actually, like, I woke up this morning and was like, did that actually happen? So I completely, I can resonate with that feeling this morning, definitely.
Oh my God. And you mentioned the interview before, Emma, and I'll admit, my eyes watered at that point. For everything that he's been through in the last few months, and for him personally, and then for him to come up and score that goal, I mean, it couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke, really. And he just seems like such a good egg, and everybody really loves him in that team. So, I mean, that was wonderful to see. Perds, tell me, you were almost on the verge of tears as well watching that, surely.
I was a broken man well before the interview. When he's walking off crying and hugging everyone, that's when I was like, done. Just sat there in silence, like, bottom lip shaking, like I just couldn't hold it in. It was just, yeah, as you say, the perfect guy for that to happen to in our team.
Yeah, absolutely. Taking that moment now into account and all the injuries and everything that's happened over this last season, let's say we do win the last two games and we come top four, where does this season rank then in terms of recent seasons for Liverpool? I mean, it started off terribly, but we might get something pretty amazing out of it. Lizzie, I'll throw that to you. Is this season a success if we come top four and have a finish like this?
I wouldn't say a success, really. I think it's bittersweet, but also understandable. I mean, we did come off like two phenomenal runs. And so given the injuries and the situation and even COVID in general, it kind of knocked people out. Bittersweet. I think people who've been with Liverpool for a while know that there has been moments where we suffered and it was absolutely horrifying to even watch a match. I think this one, even with its problems, it's been exciting sometimes. So at least we have those moments. So not the worst.
Emma, how are you? How is this ranking for you? I've seen people suggest on Twitter, and it kind of conveniently forgets a lot of the season, which has been terrible, but suggesting that this would be one of Klopp's biggest achievements if he was to secure a top four finish here.
Yeah, I find that really bizarre. I think bittersweet is a very, very good word from Lizzie to use to describe it, because I think at the start of the season, if you had said that Liverpool was scraping to get top four with three games to go, then you'd be going, well, that's an absolute failure considering the levels that they were at. But then you have to then obviously bring in the background of COVID, the fact that they lost their two starting centre backs extremely early on in the season, and then, you know, the third centre back then was lost as well. So when you factor everything in, I wouldn't call it a success, no, but I would say that they achieved what they needed to achieve come the end of the season, which was to at least secure the Champions League qualification. But no, like if you rewinded it sort of 8 months ago and asked me where would Liverpool finish the season, I would have said, well, they surely, after winning the league so comfortably last season, they have to at least be challenging for the title. And Liverpool haven't done that. So it's certainly not a success, not from my point of view. I understand what people are saying in terms of what Klopp has had to manage with the injuries, but every other manager in the league has had similar, not to the same extent, but they've had similar issues in terms of managing fixture schedules, obviously COVID, injuries. So I wouldn't say that his achievements have been in the magnitude of what he's achieved in terms of Champions League success and Premier League success. I think he's shown perhaps a different side of his management that we haven't seen before and deserves to be praised on that if they were to secure Champions League football. But I certainly wouldn't put it up there as one of Liverpool's greatest achievements under Klopp. Not for me.
Yeah, I mean, not too many. Looking at the season as a whole, not too many people are going to be buying the DVD of 2020, 2021, are they?
I think it will go down as like a cult season. Same way in that Origi goes down as a cult hero. He's basically shit, but he gave us one of the best moments of our lives. In the same way that this season is basically shit, but we've had some amazing moments as well. So not success, but, you know, in a few years' time, we'll be like, fuck, do you remember that season when all this happened? Losing six at home and like, yeah, incredible.
Yeah. Considering a month ago or a few weeks ago, we'd written off the prospect of getting Champions League football and, you know, everything that was happening, it just felt like such a downer. And now to be, you know, to have Champions League football in our own hands, you know, essentially for the final two games, amidst everything that's happened, I think it's an achievement in its own way. Obviously, it doesn't rank alongside the Premier League and Champions League, but I think, yeah, it's just nice to be positive about Liverpool again, isn't it, really? Yeah. Going back to the game then, another thing to be positive about was Thiago. He's looked good in the last couple of games for Liverpool. I thought perhaps this might have been his best performance as a Liverpool player yet. What are your thoughts on that, Lizzie, and on his season as a whole for Liverpool?
I think it's been interesting. I think I would use the word dynamic. He's had to adapt, I guess we all have, which has been difficult on everyone. I think the time frame to adapt is very limited. And so in my eyes, he's performed in that sense. And then watching him this past game, I think to me it was a proud moment to see him thrive after a season of hardship, I guess, for him. So I don't know if I would say best game for him as a Liverpool player. I'd like to think more in the future and the fact that he has more, but so far, maybe, yeah.
Emma, we've seen him play sort of, well, at least in the first half of the season, he played a lot more in the deeper role as like a number six, and we didn't really seem to see the best of him. Like, at least against Southampton, it was when he scored, right? And then yesterday against West Brom, he was playing in a much more sort of advanced role, taking people on, playing that final ball or that penultimate ball. I think that's probably where we get the best out of him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to bring that point up that we've spoken about it before, but Fabinho having to play centre-back did massively impact Thiago on the first half of the season. Well, the first half of the kind of the season without the centre-backs. So yeah, definitely massive impact. And those two games that you mentioned there, Southampton and obviously yesterday, and then I would add Manchester United to that as well. I think of the kind of the three games where we've seen Thiago just get better and better and better per game. So I think, like, I agree with you, Andy. I thought the performance on the weekend was his best one yet. And like Lizzie says, I think there's still loads more to come because we've heard him speak in post-match interviews about wanting to get in and around the box more, wanting to take more shots. I think it was after the Southampton game when he scored where he actually said in an interview with either with Ozil or Sky, I can't remember, and he said, I should be scoring more goals. I should be getting, it was off the back of, I think he was getting a bit of criticism about a lack of assists. And he said, you know, that is something that I want to bring more to my game, is getting to those positions. And he said that, you know, Clough had told him to shoot more, and he did. And Clough, again, very poignantly, after all of the talk around Alisson this Sunday, specifically pointed out two shots that Thiago had made, which I found really interesting, because I think, like, he's pointed that out for a reason. So, I think there's more to come, but yeah, definitely really, really impressed by his performance, certainly this weekend.
Yeah, his feet are just so good, and he makes space for himself when he's in those advanced positions on the edge of the box. We saw it a couple of times with those shots where he like managed to beat a man and get his shot away. And I think that has got to be where he's going to be looking to play going forward, or at least going into next season. Well, Pers, I'll throw this next one to you. I mean, it's good. Everyone's feeling good today. It's a wonderful moment in the modern history of Liverpool Football Club. But is it worrying that we needed a last-minute winner from Alisson to be already relegated West Brom? I mean, that's the cold, hard facts of the matter, isn't it?
I really didn't think we were going to do it yesterday from about 60 minutes, because it was just one of those games. Again, like we're saying, Thiago needs to bump his assists. Like, he could have had about four yesterday, to be honest. So he's getting in the right positions in that. But it's not for the want of trying, you know? Like, we looked bang up for it. We just couldn't break them down. We basically just need to stumble over the line for the rest of this season. And I don't care how we do it. Like, two more Alisson 95th minute headers will do, please.
I'll take that. Yeah. All right.
I mean, done. If that's happening, then I need to get some more rum in, because I can't physically get through the next, like, 2 weeks. It's just my heart.
Emma, how would you feel if you grew the mustache back and then scored two more winners?
I know,
game over for you.
Yeah, I mean, you were quite big on the moustache thing, weren't you? I wasn't as big a fan. I probably prefer him to stick without, although it would be even more impressive that he would look like somebody from like the 80s. And then, so I guess from that sense, okay.
How worried were you then about the sort of the pre 95th minute performance then from Liverpool, Emma? Is it, I mean, they're making chances, they're just not putting them away. I mean, you, on the one hand, you can say that, I mean, during that period in which they lost six games at home, that they just didn't look like scoring for a lot of the time. Now things seem to have changed, where we are getting more shots on goal, creating more chances, but still the goals just aren't flowing.
Yeah, it was a really tricky one, because I was thinking about this earlier and I was like struggling to kind of dissect the performance before Alisson, because I think overall, I thought Trent had another good game. He was putting in loads of good balls. Thiago dominated midfield. At the back, I think Reece Williams struggled with those long balls over the top. I think that was a big issue.
He did.
But in terms of like man-to-man marking, I think they were fine. And again, sort of up front, like, you know, Firmino was getting into some good positions. Salah looked sharp again. Mane was still off the boil, but there was enough there to kind of, you know, for Liverpool to get over the line. I think it's just there were occasions where I was kind of screaming like shoot at the TV.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's something which, this sounds like the most ridiculously unanalytical thing ever, but sometimes I just watch like Mane and Firmino and think just have a shot, like, rather than having three or four touches, you know, like last season or even the season before, I feel like some of their actions they would have done in, you know, in one or two touches, and it just doesn't seem as quicker. It's almost like they're taking an extra touch because they haven't got the confidence to play it first time, or they're not quite as aware of where it comes were as they were last season or the season before. So that's the main thing for me. It's just do everything quicker and shoot at the goal.
I mean, this is exactly the kind of insight we have you on the podcast for.
Exactly.
But no, I totally agree. Like, I was looking at something the other day with Roberto Firmino's stats, and it was in the 2017-18 season when Liverpool got to the Champions League final against Real Madrid that he got something like 44 goals and assists combined in that season, which was amazing. And he obviously played really well in the Champions League that season, which boosted his stats. I think he got like 10 goals or something in that competition alone. But since then, everything's just sort of been a bit of a decline for him. And I don't know what it is this season, but it's about 15 goals and assists in total, which is a huge drop off when you compare that. And he's playing the same role with the same front three. And it's just, it's strange that we're just seeing a completely different player, because there are games like the other week when he, against Manchester United, when he pops up with two goals and he does look the business, but then he just disappears again for eight games. I'll give that to you, Lizzie. I mean, what's your take on the Firmino situation? Are you still backing him to perform at this level, or would you prefer maybe some, like, at least to have competition come in for next season in that position?
I think yet for me, I completely agree with you, Emma. I think to me, it's quite an odd thing, and I'm sure it's not the case, but I just see a lack of urgency on everybody's part, where you see so many extra touches, so many extra plays, and that lack of confidence. I think Firmino can get there. I do think it's a bit of adjusting. I think whereas they were very accustomed to having someone on their left or on their right to pass to without even giving it a second thought, they don't feel that same way now. I think competition is always healthy. It keeps up a good level, not in a disrespectful manner. I think if Klopp were to bring someone in just to challenge someone during trainings and to have them up to par, I would always agree with that, as long as it's not done in that I'm going to replace you because you had a bad season type of way.
Indeed. I mean, one player who is back in form is Trent Alexander-Arnold. Again, he was playing fantastically well yesterday, driving forward and creating things from that right back position. There was a report today, I think from David Ornstein in The Athletic, that he is likely to miss out on England's Euro 2020 squad. Lizzie, as a non-British person, how does that strike you? Like, I mean, obviously, as a Liverpool fan, you have your own sort of feelings on Trent Alexander-Arnold. But does it seem strange to you that he's just not in? Well, he's part of the conversation, but that he might not get in that England side?
Very much so. So I started getting into the Euros, I think, when Stevie was like at his best. And it's very odd to me every year because the decisions made are confusing on my end. And I don't know if it's because I'm a pond away that I don't understand them, but, or maybe I'm just biased to Liverpool, but I do think he's been great so far and they could obviously use him. So that's weird. And then, like, I mean, I love Hendo, but, like, having him instead of, like, fresh new talent or young, it's just very odd decisions on my end. And I think that no one here has to make those because they'd be 10 times worse.
Perds, they're talking, it's probably going to be, well, the report says Trippier, Kyle Walker, and then Reece James as a third right back. You're shaking your head at me. Don't like it.
That's all. I can almost put up with a conversation that he doesn't start, you know, just doesn't start. But not bringing him at all is ludicrous. Like, he's one of the best, if not the best, fullback in the world. I mean, he's proved it over the last few weeks and seasons. I just don't get it. And he was defensively amazing yesterday. I remember, I think Robson Carney went through again on the right-hand side and he covered so much ground to get a foot in and block it. And we would have been 2-0 down. Like,
yeah, that was
it, it's just
one, yeah.
Such lazy punditry to say he can't defend. Just because he's not Wan-Bissaka and sits there and it's just a block doesn't mean he can't defend. Look, he's come on leaps and bounds since like 2017 when he got ripped up by Rashford. And he was great against Man United away last week. It's just, it's ludicrous, and England will miss out big time if they don't take him.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me is that, well, I know Walker, they Gareth Southgate likes because he can play in a back three as well as at right back. But Trent, I think, gives you something else that the other defenders don't really. And he can play in a much more advanced role. And if you want to switch to a 3-4-3 or 3-5-2 or whatever, he can play that sort of winger role, essentially. Whereas I don't think the others give you that kind of attacking versatility.
Yeah, I understand Walker coming for the versatility in defence. I understand Trippier because Southgate loves him and that's fine. But Reece James over in, like, look, he's a great...
Not having it.
He's, no, and that's not a slight on Reece James. I think he's decent, but he's nowhere near like Alexander-Arnold. Yeah, fine, hate him. Get him out. He's nowhere near Alexander-Arnold, is he? But he's still good.
Okay, yeah, on that, we will take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the crunch games against Burnley and Crystal Palace to round off Liverpool's season, hopefully finishing in the top four. Okay, and we're back. That's it. Big Sam down. West Brom vanquished. Next up, it's Sean Dyche and Roy Hodgson left to go. I mean, if you had to pick three managers at the start of the season that you sort of didn't want to face, as like a sort of end of level bosses in a gauntlet to face, it probably would have been Big Sam, Sean Dyche and Roy Hodgson. But one of them is out of the way. Emma, which one is the scariest now? Is it Burnley away or is it Palace at home?
Burnley away for me. I think the physicality of the likes of Chris Wood, you know, Ashley Barnes, Matej Vidra, those kind of players up front. I know you're laughing, but Reece Williams.
No, I'm laughing. It's in fear. I'm laughing. That's,
yeah, you know, like, I'm just, you know, poor Reece Williams again. Nothing against him. He's a young lad. He's still got a hell of a lot to learn. He's done a brilliant job sitting in at centre back this season for Liverpool, but he is still not. You know, he's at the very early stages of his development. So for him to be up against a good informed Chris Wood as well, by the way, very informed Chris Wood, physically, I think he's going to really struggle. And like I said, you know, earlier in the podcast, I think this weekend he struggled massively in terms of those long balls and those aerial balls. Burnley do that for fun constantly for the full 90 minutes. They just launch long balls, crosses, balls in behind, and he's going to really have to step up his level. So to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me if we see Fabinho drop into centre back this weekend along with Nat Phillips.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask, but do you want them to do that? Or would
absolutely
you prefer them? Yeah,
it's a no-brainer for me. Like, and again, this is nothing against Reece Williams, but I just think you can't play him in that back four against Burnley because we'll just get absolutely slaughtered. So I think in turn, by doing that, it means you're going to lose a bit of that creativity that we've seen Thiago be able to enjoy in midfield. So it's going to make it harder to break Burnley down. So there's going to be a knock-on effect all around. I think it's going to be really difficult. I really do.
Lizzie, are you confident going into these final two games of the season? Obviously, Emma's touched on the physicality of Burnley and how difficult a team they are. But, I mean, they have no wins in their last eight at home at Turf Moor. And Palace only have, well, they've not been in great form and they only have one win away from home against the big six this season. So the stats are there to suggest that it might be okay for Liverpool.
I think they have the team. I think they have the ability. Palace at home scares me just because it seems like a haunted game to me. The past hasn't been on our side. So I think from a mental perspective, going into that as the last game of the season might be a little bit difficult, especially because Anfield, you have to perform at a certain level. It's been the critique of the season, I guess, on the bubble of Twitter I've been on, that playing at home, especially in a sacred ground like Anfield, you have to perform. And it's weird that Liverpool, of all teams, at home has been dropping so many points in such silly manners. So I think Burnley will get through. I don't want to say smoothly. I don't think that will be the case. I think it'll be a tough struggle.
Nothing has been smooth this season.
Exactly. And I think we're used to it. So I think we'll see a little bit more of that. But my fear is going into Palace that last game and just getting through that. Oh, yeah. Would pay to be in that locker room beforehand.
I forgot that... obviously, Turf Moor are going to have fans back as well. So
yes,
I think that makes the task much tougher as well.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? There's going to be fans at Turf Moor and at Anfield, which is kind of a spanner in the works, potentially also a good spanner. Pers, are you going to be there at Anfield on the final day?
I am. I got a ticket.
Amazing.
Sorry to make everyone jealous here, but yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can't believe it either. But so there's a bit extra riding on yesterday and this Burnley game, because otherwise there's just no point going, really, other than just a nice little day out at Anfield. But hopefully there's something on it and we beat Burnley.
You sure you're going to be okay going up with that foot, you know? It's not not going to stop you. Point.
I will use the crutches to get me there.
Okay? on to get a better seat.
I'll get... yeah. Can I sit in the disabled bit? Probably not.
No.
How many fans are going to be there? Do we know? What's the sort of maximum capacity?
8,000, I think they said.
I think it might be 8 for Anfield, maybe 10 for Turf Moor. I might have got that wrong.
But... okay.
It's pretty amazing. Amount, though, to make an impact.
Yeah. Definitely. Mm. Are we expecting then that to, because like as I said, Burnley haven't won in 8 at Turf Moor, which is quite surprising given that you sort of the common cliche is that they're one of the sort of the fortress teams that are very difficult to go to. Do we expect that then to change with fans?
Yeah, I do. I think like I've been in the Turf Moor home stand before, and I know, like, obviously I've been with work, and I know it's a very hostile environment, I'd say. It's a small stadium, so you really do feel the fans. And Klopp has mentioned it for the last week and a half in his press conferences. Every time they ask him about the return of fans at Anfield, he keeps mentioning the fact that Liverpool have to go to Turf Moor and face their fans. So it's clearly something that's in their mind. So I think he's obviously been trying to make the players aware that there's going to be additional pressures. There's going to be, you know, that kind of extra edge that they're going to give. So, I mean, it might help the Liverpool players because they might be more pumped and they might have something to react to and play against. But I don't think you can. I don't think you can look at that fixture without acknowledging that the Burnley players will react to their fans as well. So yeah. It's just a case of who deals with it better, I guess.
I was going to say, Lizzie, like, In a way, we've seen Liverpool play better when they are pumped and when they are up for it. And maybe, you know, especially with what happened with Alisson's goal giving everyone a boost, maybe just the idea of fans in general, regardless of who they're cheering for, might actually be a boost for Liverpool, you know, in this game as well as at Anfield.
Yeah, I think it might also be a sense of relief in terms of having that normalcy back, and it doesn't quite feel so odd in an empty stadium with odd noises, I would say. I think, yeah, bringing back that edge and having something to play for. I know when you have thousands of people yelling against you, you tend to play a little bit better in terms of morale and energy. And I think, honestly, that's what Liverpool needs. I think they need a wake-up call so many times during a game. So that might be it. And that sense of urgency to prove something to visiting fans could be the factor. We don't know. But I suspect
Speaking of odd noises, is there anything we're going to miss about the about empty stadiums being broadcast live? I mean, I heard a lot of Trent Alexander-Arnold swearing very clearly yesterday, which was great fun. So I think I will miss that a little bit. I was just wondering, Emma, like, you've been reporting on some of these games. Is there anything that's like any of the sort of insights that you've got from not having crowd noise that you've gleaned?
Yeah, I mean, I actually said that I found it really interesting hearing the manager's like instructions, and certainly from reporting actually in the stadiums as well, when you hear that, it's like, because the press box is usually not too far away from, like, you know, the touchline. So to hear that is really interesting. But even things like, speaking of Burnley, like I reported on their game this weekend, and there was a moment where I think like Chris Wood was battling with the defender, I can't remember who it was, and you could just hear Sean Dyche go, "Get at him, Woody, get at him, get at him," and just like And I put that in my live text, and it's like that sort of bit of, I guess, colourful insight that we've been able to see we'll miss out on. So yeah, I am sort of a little bit sad. Like, I kind of want the managers to just be mic'd up from like this point on.
Imagine how good that would be. Yeah, I love that. Like, we, because of, you know, the way everything is, we idolise these players and managers and put these games like in this weird sort of mythical world almost. And then once you actually see it, like, boiled down to its essence without everything else around it, it's essentially just, you know, Sunday league, but at a really, really high standard. So the shouts and everything are exactly the same that you would hear just down the park, but just between millionaires, essentially. And you do get like, get at him and man on and come on, ref, and everything all the same.
And Thiago's constant, I got the ball, when he got nowhere.
Yes.
<the ball.
laughs> Yeah, I might have to set that as like a text alert or something just to have that with me yeah. after fans come back. Perds, how do we manage the squad then for the final two games of the season? I mean, is there any way to, with all the injuries, is it just a case of playing who's fit, or is there any players you particularly like to see play against Burnley and not against Palace, or vice versa?
We've got no options again. I'm in complete agreement that Fabinho needs to sit at centre back for this one, unfortunately. Who comes in to replace him? James Milner, in my mind, if he's still about. Is he,
I think he's
okay?
still out, though, isn't he?
No, amazing. No. Oh. I think he should be back by Wednesday. Klopp said that he should be okay for Wednesday. Same with Oxlade-Chamberlain, actually.
Yeah, not Oxlade-Chamberlain. Oh, well. Milner. Milner can sit, I think. And then, look, we've got no other options. Jota being out for these two games is a massive miss. I don't think we would have got through Man United without him, for example, and we almost didn't get through yesterday without him. So it's no changes apart from Milner in for Reece Williams, I guess.
All right. Lizzie, any thoughts on the way that the teams might line up then against Burnley and Palace? Are there any players that you'd like to see come in for those games? Or is it just a case of, as Purdy says, play whoever is fit?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Purdy. I think that's the way to go and kind of seal the chapter that has been this interesting season, and then look forward to next. I think we desperately need a break. I think players need to come back healthy, and we'll enjoy from having a full bench again. I miss those days.
Remember when we had good players on our bench? That was something.
I think we could see Wijnaldum come in for Curtis Jones, though, because obviously Curtis Jones started this weekend, didn't he? So
I wouldn't be too surprised to see Wijnaldum come back into the starting 11.
I think he was just rested purely, Klopp said, just because he's played so much football. So I think he probably did have Burnley in terms of, because Wijnaldum's very good at keeping the ball, isn't he? And, you know, he's good So I think he'll come in for Curtis Jones.
Yeah, I'd be amazed if Wijnaldum didn't start against Burnley, and he might even have to be captain considering who is not available. Just before we go to predictions, then, do we care who wins out of Leicester and Chelsea? I mean, someone has to drop points, so essentially it's now Liverpool's to lose, essentially. But as long as they win both games, they are guaranteed top four. But is there a scenario here that is better for Liverpool? Emma, you're nodding at me.
Yeah, because if Chelsea win the Champions League but finish outside of the top four, then the fourth place in the Premier League would not qualify for the Champions League.
What?
Is that right? Really?
Sure.
Yeah, if let's say Chelsea finish fifth and win the Champions League, then they take that fourth Champions League spot and the fourth place would drop into the Europa League. So Liverpool basically need Chelsea to qualify for the Champions League just in case they win. And finish outside.
Oh my God, how did I not know this? There's been so much confusion about this. I thought it was in previous years where they have five teams go in. But I think that City are going to steamroll them anyway in the final, I hope.
Yeah, they will, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, we have to support City now. That's terrible.
I mean, it'll be fine as long as Chelsea sort of get top four ahead of Leicester. It's fine.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we want Chelsea to get top four. That's the ideal scenario. Yeah,
I think so. Like, you're making me doubt this now. I've had this conversation with about five different colleagues and we're all on the same wavelength. So I'm pretty certain that's the scenario.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah. But as long as we're not getting Conference League, then I'm happy, essentially.
Yeah. And it all factors into, like, qualification stages as well. Like, if you finish third as opposed to fourth, then obviously you come in at, like, I don't know, like the second round of qualifying, or so there are knock-on effects to what position.
Can we finish third?
I don't think so. Can we?
Can we?
I haven't looked at the table.
Yeah, we can.
Leicester have to lose both games or something?
Yeah.
We still can.
Mathematically, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, Perds, I'm glad that you're keeping up the optimism. It's a marked change from the last few weeks. Since you've broken your foot, actually, you've been a changed man. It's amazing.
I know. Thanks.
I'll go to you first then on the predictions, then we'll do both games because we'll have another pod then before Sunday. So first off, it's Burnley away and then Palace at home. Purdy, take us home. What's going to be the final two results of the season?
1-0 win against Burnley. 6-0 against Palace.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Seems realistic. Nice. Yeah.
I'll be there cheering him on. So, Alisson, I'll give him an assist in either of them.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Emma, what are you saying?
I mean, usually I'd be like, Perds, like, what are you on about? 6-0. But I mean, we've just seen Alisson score a 95th minute like winner. So
anything is possible.
Exactly. That's fine. So I'll go for 10-0 against Burnley.
Yeah.
12-0 against Palace.
I feel like you guys aren't taking this seriously anymore.
Well, no. Hang on. That would be a downgrade, my one, because we beat Palace 7-0 earlier this season. Do you remember that?
That's true. Away from home as well.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's more likely going to be 12, I think.
Well, no. It's seriously now. Like, I'm going to go 2-1 Burnley, 2-0 Palace.
What? Oh, 2-0, 2-1 to us. Both wins.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeez. All right. Okay. And Lizzie, what are you saying? Give us your predictions then for the final two games of the season.
I agree with them. A 2-1 at Burnley, and I want to say 3-1 at home against Palace.
Okay,
tricky
nice.
Game. They get that. In our heads. They do every time.
I think I'm going to join you girls and say 2-1 against Burnley, and then a fairly comfortable 2-0 at home to Palace on the final day of the season, which should see us over the line. But yes, I agree that Burnley is the one to worry about. But let's keep the faith, shall we? Jeez.
Anything can happen. Alisson scores 95th minute. Anything can happen.
But that means that Nick Pope can score a 95th minute winner against them.
No.
And
the rules only apply to Liverpool.
Yeah.
The only thing, only us.
All right, I'll take that. I think that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back again next week to do, a season, closure, a review. Maybe we can go through everything that's happened and the final game of the season in which we've hopefully qualified for the Champions League at least. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, please drop us a review wherever you get your pods. It'd be much appreciated. Follow us on Twitter and subscribe if you haven't already, all of that stuff. And that's it, really. It's goodbye from me, Andrew Hedspeth. Perds, say goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll see you next time.
Emma, say goodbye.
Goodbye. Last minute winner from Adrian, who comes on as a substitute.
Love it. Love it. And for the first time, Lizzie, say goodbye.
Bye. Amazing to be here.